And welcome to Small Town Mysteries, a show where three longtime friends from Massachusetts tell crazy and heartbreaking true stories filled with the extra flair of small town mystery. I'm Kate, here with Christine.
Hello.
And Rachel.
Hello.
Bringing you our next episode on Ashley Loring Heavy Runner. But before I do that, I'm going to toss it over to myself, who will be highlighting this week's missing person. This week, I'm highlighting John Gamboa, who disappeared from Mexico City in Mexico on February 17th, 2024. John was born in the Philippines. He has black hair, brown eyes, and is about 5'5 and 185 pounds. He is Filipino and speaks English and Spanish. He has a tattoo on his chest that says Jesus and an infinity tattoo on his index finger. John traveled to Mexico on Friday, February 16th, and was last seen early Saturday, February 17th, hailing a cab outside of the Montana Disco in Mexico City. He was wearing a maroon shirt and tan pants. If you have any information concerning John's whereabouts, please contact the FBI's Houston Field Office at 713-693-5000, or contact your local FBI office or American Embassy or Consulate. And I'll have pictures on our Instagram account at Small Town Mysteries of John. So please check that out if you live in the Mexico City area or think you may have seen him. That would be very helpful. All right. I'm going to pass it over to Christine now for the bulk of our episode, the meat of the episode. Haven't said that in a hot minute.
Oh, man. I did not miss that. Okay. So I apologize if my voice also sounds weird. I'm like at the tail end of a cold in that funky period where like, I'm feeling pretty much all better, but my voice is still weird, so sorry. But this week, I am going to be talking about the mysterious disappearance of Ashley Loring Heavy Runner. One day in June of 2017, Ashley just completely vanished from the Blackfeet Reservation in Browning, Montana. This case has been on my radar for actually quite a minute. I initially was going to pick this one, you know, months ago for a missing person that we cover at the beginning of the podcast. But when I kind of looked closer into it, I realized that the amount of information on this case was a little more conducive to a full episode. So here we are. And just one shocking statistic before we get into it, because, you know, Blackfeet Reservation, Ashley was Native American. So according to whentheywerehere.com, in Montana, indigenous women and girls make up only 3-4% of the population, but they account for approximately 30% of those deemed missing by the Montana Department of Justice.
Oh, holy shit. God. That's crazy. I also want to just, while you're on that topic, pop in here. I don't know if we've talked about it on the podcast before, but the concept of like missing women, like women who aren't recorded as existing in the first place, so that them being missing isn't like so that like statistics get thrown off. Just want to mention a really good podcast that covers specifically those cases of missing women and a lot of Native American women in particular. It's called Someplace Underneath. It may sound familiar because I use them a lot when I did the Josh Duggar episode last summer. So please go check that out if this conceptually is of interest to you, because they have a lot more like very in-depth info on that. And I do believe they talk about Montana, like specifically.
Okay. It's a good rec. So Browning, Montana is a former town. Yes, former and current unincorporated community in Glacier County, Montana, United States.
I'm sorry. What?
Yeah, it's a first.
Okay. So incorporated communities have entered the chat.
Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate?
So the town, it's my next sentence, but the town was disincorporated in 2018, after the town's government collapsed financially. So I guess that happens every now and then.
That sucks.
Yeah.
Okay. If that was going to happen anywhere, it would be Montana.
Yes, and it is a seemingly very poor area.
That also, certainly. Yeah.
I mean, so it was a town during the time of Ashley's disappearance. That happened about a year after when it was disincorporated. And according to the census, the town has a total area of 0.27 square miles. 0.27.
So teeny, teeny tiny.
Very, very tiny. All of which is land, and then a total population of 1,018 as of 2020. So a lot of people packed into a little small area.
So it's a very small incorporated community.
Unincorporated, yes.
Small unincorporated community mystery.
Yeah.
Imagine. New podcast name. Doesn't have the same ring to it.
It doesn't. It doesn't. That's okay. At the time of Ashley's disappearance, her sister Kimberly had been traveling to Morocco, and Kimberly was actually planning on moving into Ashley's apartment in Missoula, Montana, when she got back from Morocco. But when she arrived home, Kimberly was not able to get in contact with Ashley. And that was pretty unusual, as both of them were very close. They had even been messaging hours prior to her sister landing from her flight. And at this point, Kimberly did not immediately panic, since Ashley did have a habit of losing her phone. She was 20 years old. She had her own life, had a lot of friends, big social life. So it wasn't that far-fetched that she wouldn't immediately, you know, be there and be answering. But the next day, June 9th, Kimberly still hadn't heard from Ashley. So she goes and hops on Facebook Messenger and checks her and her sister's last conversation. And she does get concerned when it says that Ashley was last active 18 hours ago, which was very unusual for Ashley. Like, that was the longest her sister can remember it ever saying that she was inactive. So she attempted texting her, calling her, but nothing was successful. Days went by, and Ashley's family was still hopeful that, you know, Ashley might be visiting a friend somewhere. But at around the week mark, they do start to realize that something very wrong could have happened to Ashley. And Ashley's father thinks back to a concerning conversation he had with her right before she vanished. Ashley had run into her family's house and she started shutting all of the blinds. And when her dad asked her what's going on, Ashley just said, "I did something." When he attempted to get further information from her, Ashley would not divulge anything further. She only continued to shut the blinds and panic. At this point, a car starts to pull up. And when Ashley's dad goes to look outside, like kind of like peers through the blinds, her panicking only intensifies. And she tells him, like, "Don't look outside. Don't look outside." After waiting in silence for several minutes inside of their house, Ashley bolts out of the house. And that's the last time, to our knowledge, that her dad and anyone has really seen her physically at this point.
Okay. So that's extremely suspicious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What could be going on at this point?
That raises several questions.
It makes me feel like I don't, like, obviously I have to think about, like, I did something. Like, what did she do? Like, did she rob somebody? Did she take drugs? Like, I don't, these are just things playing in my mind. You know what I mean?
I feel like there's two major paths of sort of theories about what that incident could have been regarding, one of which would be that she had done something that someone else perceived as wrong or against them, and they actually were looking for her in retribution, or that she was completely paranoid, which I think is also fully plausible given, you know, there's not a ton of other information.
Mm-hmm.
And her dad saying that it was, like, odd and everything, like, could it have been a paranoid delusion?
Yeah.
That then also led to her disappearance. I feel like those are the two paths here.
June 12th, Ashley's mom heads over to law enforcement to report her daughter is missing. But reservation law enforcement is unconvinced that anything concerning has happened to Ashley. Feels like the millionth time these words have left my mouth, but they're of the belief that Ashley could have been visiting a friend or traveling somewhere. She was 20, and to be fair, she did have a past of spontaneously spending time away from home with friends or with significant others. And another thing to note here that we've briefly mentioned is that Ashley had fallen down the path of substance abuse following the death of her grandfather, which was very difficult for her to cope with. But Ashley had never gone this long without, at the very least, messaging her sister. That was very unusual.
I really do. It always is frustrating when law enforcement just says like, oh, she just ran off. And even in a case like this where she does have a history of doing that, if they know that this is different, mm-hmm. that should be taken so much more seriously if her loved ones and those who are familiar with her behaviors and patterns are like,
hey, we have a problem here.
Yeah, yeah, she's done this before, but she's never right. gone this long without messaging me, at least. You know, like, she'll get away from anyone else, but she still lets me know that she's okay, and I haven't heard from her. Like, this is raising the alarm bells. Like, that should be taken a lot more seriously, and that's what's so frustrating about so many of these missing person cases. The people who know them best aren't listened to. It's yeah. like, you need to listen to the people who know their behaviors.
And to my knowledge, her family had never, like, attempted to report her, or she had not been reported as missing before. So clearly this time was different, like you were saying. At this point, Kimberly still holds out hope that Ashley had maybe gone to visit friends and had lost her phone, because, like I said, that was something that she did semi-often. But when their dad unexpectedly went to the hospital due to liver failure, that's when all hope went out the window, and Kimberly knew without a doubt that her sister was gone, that something had happened to her. And since law enforcement is still no help, Kimberly takes it upon herself to reach out to all of Ashley's friends on social media to see if anyone has seen or heard from her after June 5th. And at that point, no one had admitted to seeing her. After this, she goes on to successfully report Ashley as missing to Blackfeet law enforcement, as well as tribal law enforcement, after several other days had passed. They completed an unsuccessful 3-day search of the reservation. And okay, I just have to, so I saw the statistic, I didn't put it in, but it was like mind-blowing to me. There are 15 Blackfeet cops, essentially, for like the entire jurisdiction. It's like the entire state of Montana. There's 15 of these people.
What the hell?
That's crazy.
Like, what?
What?
Talk about,
how do you do anything?
Small resources.
Yeah.
That's no
resources. That's an impossible task. It just is.
It is.
Like, yeah. That many people cannot cover that much land. No way.
No. No. So 2 weeks after Ashley had gone missing, law enforcement did receive a tip from someone who saw a young woman running away from a vehicle on U.S. Highway 89, a busy road on the reservation. Following this tip, an extensive search of the area began, which led to a dump site where volunteers found a gray sweater, which is believed to belong to Ashley. And just wait, because this next sentence is going to piss you guys off. But Ashley's family turned the sweater over to the Bureau of Indian Affairs for testing, only to later discover it was never sent to a crime lab for testing and instead had been sitting in a box in evidence the whole time.
What yeah. in the absolute?
Yeah.
I want to say that I'm surprised.
But I'm not.
I'm not.
I just, like, I can't believe you can't send it in.
That takes 2 seconds. It really does.
Well.
It probably doesn't. It probably takes more than that.
No, it's chain of evidence. So because of the chain of evidence, it has to be delivered by hand.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a lot of paperwork and stuff, but the thing is, like, I'm sorry, but you signed up for the job.
And was this all, this was also the reservation? So they're already understaffed and mm-hmm. yeah. Okay. I'm not justifying it. I'm from a procedural standpoint, I can understand how something like that could be overlooked, but that doesn't matter when it's your family member who's missing and there's something that could have been done about it that never gets done. Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how overworked or underpaid or understaffed they are.
At the end of the day, nobody deserves to just be, to just sit on the shelf for the rest of their lives and just never be talked about. Like, that's not... It's not okay.
During all of this, Kimberly continued to reach out to people Ashley knew and finds out that the last time anyone saw Ashley was at a party on June 5th in Browning. There is even a video on Facebook, apparently, which shows Ashley sitting on the couch as people are drinking. So Kimberly had talked to Ashley the day after this party, so we don't think anything necessarily happened at the party. And then she also did talk to a couple people who claimed to have talked to Ashley the day after, which was June 7th. A lot of people that Kimberly talked to regarding Ashley were really helpful and willing to give as much information as they can, but some were reported as being defensive. I haven't found anything specifically in regards to that. There is something later that I think that might have been talking about in that source. So we'll get to that a little later. People Kimberly talked to have a wide range of theories and just things that they've heard about what had happened to Ashley, with some saying, you know, they heard that she had gotten hurt, others saying that she had been taken up to a mountain somewhere, kind of like typical small town rumor mill happening here. Like everyone kind of has some rumor that they're treading down.
That's a small town part of it for you.
Yeah.
Gossip runs like wildfire.
It really does. But in the midst of all of these rumors, there is one name that does continue to pop up, and that is Sam McDonald. So Sam is currently in his 50s, and he and Ashley had been seen together pretty frequently before her disappearance and the years before her disappearance as well. Or not years, but months. They had apparently been casually seeing each other at the time. I know, like she was 20 years old and he's in his 50s.
Gag.
Yeah, uncomfortable. Ugh. So based on the rumors, she had gone over to Sam's house after the party. And on a podcast of all places that Sam willingly went on, he admitted that he and Ashley did spend time together after the party, several days, in fact. Sam stated that they went over to his place after the party. They did drugs, were up for days, and every now and then Ashley would just disappear. By the 11th, he wanted Ashley to go home. He was like, you need to go bed, come down from what we're on, get some rest. So when they're driving, Ashley asked him to pull over, and she said that she was going to get a ride back with someone else who she calls P-Dog. Ashley asks Sam where this random cabin is. She's like, do you know where this cabin is? Blah, blah, blah. I'm looking for it. And he points in the general direction. And from there, he says he's not too sure what happened because he leaned back in his seat and just passed out. So
he's, you know, obviously a super reliable source.
Yeah.
Of course.
It just sounds very convenient.
This is convenient. This is a guy who accidentally may have admitted to be the last person to see her alive and clearly knows a lot more than he's letting on. So, yeah, obviously I trust this guy's opinion.
But there was actually a person who went by the name of P-Dog in the area, and his real name is Paul J. Valenzuela. So Valenzuela and Ashley were reported to be involved with each other as well. This guy was also in his 50s, by the way.
Like romantically?
Just so you know. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, come on. Come on. Yeah.
But they were also connected in other ways. Namely, he was married to Ashley's cousin.
Okay. No. Actually, that's weird.
Yep.
This just keeps going from like uncomfortable to like just off the charts uncomfortable. Like, I don't even know how to describe it.
So much is going on here. So many uncomfortable things happening. Kimberly heard about the fact, you know, from the podcast that Sam said P-Dog had given Ashley a ride. And Kimberly asked his wife, her cousin, if that was true. Like, did Paul really give Ashley a ride back? Their cousin says yes, he did give her a ride. But when Kimberly calls Paul to question him about this, he gets really defensive and he says, my wife is lying about me. She's making all of this up. So I don't know.
Oh, okay.
A little sus.
Something smells fishy here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And during a search around this time, Ashley's family does discover a torn sweater and a pair of red stained boots, which do appear to be stained with blood. But, wait for it, shortly after law enforcement gets them, they get misplaced.
Wow, color me shocked.
They're, like, completely lost. Like, they just don't even know where they are. This isn't even, like...
So their whole, this whole case, just gone. Nothing. Nothing left.
Yeah. Like, that could have been so helpful.
I understand that humans make mistakes. Okay? And, like, I'm not part of law enforcement. Like, I don't know how difficult it is, so I'm, like, not gonna speak to it. But, like, you misplace one thing, okay. You misplace multiple things? Multiple. Then we're like, okay, how the fuck?
I would go so far as to say that that is a little fishy. Yeah. To lose more than one piece of major evidence. I don't want to point any fingers unnecessarily, but...
It's one thing to, you know, have something just sitting in evidence and not do anything with it. It's another to just have something completely go missing. Yeah. There's no... It's not even like years had gone by. There had been fires. There had been like shifts in ownership and whatnot. Like it's been like weeks, like a couple months at this point. Yeah. It shouldn't happen.
That shouldn't happen.
No.
And this is crazy because this is what, 2017?
Yeah.
Like you would think that this was like, okay, in the late 90s, like in the late 90s or early 2000s. But like in the past decade that happened.
This is good modern incompetence.
Got it. Yeah.
Good way to put it.
Also around this time, Kimberly gets a message from Paul's wife, again, her cousin, saying that Ashley is being kept by him in a nearby town named Shelby. She gives a specific room number and everything, saying that Ashley has dyed her hair blonde, and she tells Kimberly, get police involved.
Okay.
I know. I was like, okay, where's this going? Come on. So when law enforcement gets to the hotel, they discover the woman with the dyed hair is not Ashley, but her cousin. The same person that called and is married to Paul. The person that called and said, come and check this out. Like, that was her.
What? The shit that people will do for attention.
My patience is wearing thin.
So, like, we just have so many untrustworthy people here. Sam's not trustworthy. Paul's not trustworthy. And the cousin who I had initially thought, okay, maybe she has some information. Maybe she can provide something for us. Mm-mm. She's not trustworthy either.
Yeah, like, what is her
idea here? Just sending them on a wild goose chase, like, fucking with them? What is that?
Right. Like, what's her MO?
I don't know.
It's like, at that point, you have to think she really doesn't actually care about her cousin's well-being.
No.
Because at that point, she's actively wasting police resources and hindering their investigation by sending out a false tip like that.
Yep.
I mean, that's just, you have to have malice in your heart to do that. Or be such a raging narcissist that you don't see anything wrong with it, which is a separate but similar issue.
Right. So, kind of the consensus with at least the town rumor mill is that Paul, Sam, and Ashley's cousin do have something to do with her disappearance. Either one of them or some combination of all of them have some sort of knowledge about what happened to her, which I don't think is shocking that that's where the rumor mill is going. Those were all people that had last seen her. And then this is a disturbing report from some of Sam's neighbors that I feel like I just have to put out there to preface this. Like, this isn't anything solid. It's just reports from his neighbors that I had seen floating around various sources. So his neighbors reported that in the past they had seen girls running out of his home naked. I know. Concerning. Very, very concerning.
Incredibly.
Concerning enough that neighbors reportedly told law enforcement about this, but nothing had been done. And if that's true, come on. Like, I'm not surprised by like all that we've learned and by how incredibly understaffed they seem to be, but it's just ridiculous at this point.
It's just sad.
Yep. Yeah.
It really is. Like,
what is happening in this area? It doesn't make it surprising that so many people are going missing from these areas when you hear about like the resources that they don't have and also like just the people that aren't doing anything about it. Like, everything is going unchecked. Sad.
And the thing is, this is only one story. That's important to think about too.
There's dozens just like it, probably in Montana alone.
Yeah.
And that's not a dig at Montana. That's a commentary on how prevalent mishandling of cases like these is.
During another search with law enforcement, one in which Kimberly was actually involved in, the officer during that search is asked to go over to Paul's trailer because his wife had just set it on fire.
Unhinged.
Oh, dear.
In a podcast episode, Ashley's cousin stated that her and Paul were getting a divorce and he had asked her to leave, so she just set the whole thing on fire.
I kind of do have to admire committing arson and then going on a podcast and being like, yeah, I committed arson. I really would just say in general, don't do that.
But I also think it's kind of funny. Like, I can't help but laugh. She was like, oh, you want a divorce? Then I'm going to light this shit on fire.
I also really think these people need to stop going on podcasts. And I feel like that's a pretty big statement coming from somebody who has a podcast. But sometimes podcasting about it is not the way to go.
Yeah.
Maybe not. Perhaps not.
Okay. So while I do think it probably was just a lover's quarrel, it could, you know, people have brought up that it could also have been a convenient way to get rid of evidence if she was involved and if Paul was involved and she wanted to help him cover it up. So,
yeah, perfect timing.
Yeah. And then following that, a search was conducted surrounding the trailer, but nothing was found, not surprisingly. So fast forward a bit, and Paul is arrested on weapons charges. He had also had a whole kind of string of charges earlier in his life, so this was not the first one. They were mostly related to, like, burglary, larceny, stuff like that. So Paul wrote a note to ABC News saying that he knew who killed Ashley and that he would tell them everything as long as ABC News could get him transferred to a new prison. And when ABC tells him, yeah, like, we can't do that, that's not how it works, he just didn't respond to them because, you know, he didn't have anything to gain from it. And it was just funny that he thought that they could control that. But no, the news
cannot
do
that. Yeah,
that's
more of a question for the prosecutor if you want to strike up a deal. ABC News isn't really going to be able to help you out there, pal.
9 months after Ashley's disappearance, the FBI did take over her case. On December 13th, 2019, human remains were found on the Blackfeet Reservation. Although the FBI crime lab concluded that the remains were not Ashley's and instead belonged to a Native American man between the ages of 45 and 60. In 2021, Up and Vanished, which is a podcast, and this is the podcast I've referenced some stuff from them throughout this episode because they did have, I think it was a 12-part series about Ashley's disappearance in particular, and they really dove very deeply into it. They did uncover a lot of information that was not known previously. For instance, Ashley was pregnant at the time of her disappearance.
No.
I know.
Oh, no.
Her family did apparently know about this. The father has not been publicly named, and her family does not believe that the father was involved in her disappearance at all.
Hmm.
Sam, Paul, and Ashley's cousin all still point fingers at each other to this day. No progress has been made with this, sadly, even after the FBI's involvement.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to mention briefly some stuff about Ashley in general. Could not find a lot about her at all, as is often the case. Mostly all just focused on her disappearance. But Ashley Loring Heavy Runner was born on November 23rd, 1996. She loved growing up with her extended family on the Blackfeet Reservation. She was a quiet child, but was kind to everyone she met. And because of this, people enjoyed being around her. She was an exceptional student in school and growing up never found herself in any trouble. Ashley preferred to be outdoors and active. She loved horses, and it was her love of the outdoors that prompted her to major in environmental sciences in college. That's a little bit about Ashley. Hopefully we get some answers about what happened to her. It's just upsetting that so much of what potentially could have helped find Ashley is not really, just not there anymore. There is currently a $15,000 reward for any information regarding Ashley's location. Ashley had dark hair. Her weight was around 90 pounds. She was Native American. She has a scar in the shape of a check mark on the top of one of her hands. And she is 5'2". She was last seen during the week of June 13th, 2017 in Browning, Montana on the Blackfeet Indian Reservation. If you have any information concerning this case, please contact the FBI's Salt Lake City Field Office at 801-579-1400 or the Blackfeet Law Enforcement Services at 406-338-4000. You can also contact your local FBI office, the nearest American embassy or consulate, or you can submit a tip online at tips.fbi.gov. And that is my case.
Thanks, Christine.
Thank you.
Although it does feel inappropriate to thank you for that.
Sorry.
But thank you for your careful research and attention to detail. Always appreciate that. We will have pictures of Ashley on our Instagram at Small Town Mysteries Pod the day before this episode comes out to announce it. So those will be up. If you live in that area at this point, we're so many years out, I would recommend you look anyway, because the likelihood of her still being in that area, I would assume, would be slim. So please check that out if you're in Montana or the surrounding states, in the off chance that you may recognize her.
You never know.
You never know.
Christine, thank you for crushing me.
Aww,
like, yeah, always. Devastating per usual.
It's just like, I just can't get over her story in general. Is like just so devastating. Mm. And like I said earlier, there are so many other stories like this.
Yeah.
Where just nothing happens, especially to Indigenous women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, where is their justice?
Nowhere. Yeah. Apparently. Yeah. That's what's so frustrating about this is they fall through the cracks. These women fall through the cracks because there's jurisdictional issues about which police department handles the cases, and then all the evidence goes missing. And it's like, you know what? These women deserve better than that.
So, did you know that the reservation police cannot not prosecute? What am I trying to say? So, like, say a person who does not live on the reservation is speeding on the highway. Like, they can't pull them over. They have to get someone else to pull them over.
Huh.
Even if they're on their territory. They don't have the right to pull over someone or to, like, handle any case involving a person who is not living on the reservation.
That's interesting.
I know. Which, like, doesn't happen anywhere else.
Usually it kind of doesn't matter as long as, like, it's the police force of the place where the crime takes place, regardless.
It's tribal law, and I guess it was a little more recent.
That tribal law is also a very specific subset of law with which I'm completely unfamiliar. There was a class on it at my school and it completely filled up and I was not able to take it. Yeah. I would have thought it would be very, very interesting, and it was one of my favorite professors who taught it. But
it does seem really interesting.
It was like a super small class, so there was no chance of me getting into it. But yeah, that's all a caveat to the fact that I didn't know that, but I also don't know much about tribal.
Yeah. I have no idea.
That's interesting. All right. Thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back next week with another episode of Small Town Mysteries. You can find us on Instagram at Small Town Mysteries Pod, where we love if you send us pictures of your animals or case recommendations that you have. If you live in a small town, live near a small town, or wish you lived in a small town, or you just have a case that you're interested in that you'd like us to cover, reach out to us at Small Town Mysteries Pod with any information you have. We would love to check it out and maybe even feature it on the show. If you send pictures of your dog, I will love you forever.
We. Hey, that's a we.
We will love you forever. And we'll definitely screenshot it and send it in our group chat and be really excited that people did that. So if you want to make our days, please send pictures of your dogs.
Send us your pets.
We literally get so happy about that. But that's all we've got for you this week. So tune in next week for another episode. And we'll see you on the flip side.
Yeah, come spar out with us next week.
Bye.
Wow, that was like very harmonious.
That was a good
one. Wasn't bad.
We should go pro.